Everybody to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams today. I'll be here tomorrow, too. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. You can find me online, thinkglink.com or bestmoneymoves.com, my financial wellness technology company. Or you can follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all over the place. Instagram, if you really want to see what I do on my time off when I'm not here in the studio. So the stock market is just having an awesome week. Stocks are up right now. You heard Orion say it, but about 530 points. It is the S&P's best week since April. S&P, of course, are the 500 biggest companies that trade. And we're seeing just a market react to the idea that there's going to be divided government, right? GOP looks like it's going to control the Senate at the moment. And the Democrats will continue to control the House. And then, of course, any moment now, we might learn a little bit more about who's going to lead the whole thing. So you'll have to stay tuned to WGN. We'll obviously be updating you. But in business news, we also have the Federal Reserve Bank. They have had their open market meeting the last couple of days. We're expecting commentary from them around 1 o'clock this afternoon. And if it breaks before we end the program, I'll bring that to you. And otherwise, I'm sure news will. And Anna may be in her show as well. A little later on, Anna DeVellante is talking about it. So we've got stocks up, and the S&P is looking great. Jobless claims still high, but they are edging a little bit lower again, which is nice. The Labor Department reported that about 751,000 U.S. workers filed for benefits this week. They were actually expecting 741,000, so a little bit above where they thought. But good news, it's the third straight week that the claims were below 800,000. Now, just to, you know, while this is good, of course, this is also for the total number of unemployed, which, you know, is down as well. But this is when the pandemic emergency unemployment assistance is starting to roll people off. So the continuing claims were down, which is good, but the PUA saw its rolls decrease, which had seen its rolls go up, I mean, is now seeing people roll off. And so that's extra money for people who wouldn't normally qualify for unemployment, and they were getting this special pandemic assistance, but that is going away. And in fact, one of the things we need to keep watch on is the fact that so many people are starting to roll off of the unemployment that they have had, which is why stimulus is so important, and we'll talk about that next. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, and as he always does, Ian Schur, editor-at-large of CNET, joins us on the line. CNET.com is a place that you can go to get all kinds of technology stories. Hey, Ian, how's it going today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So there's so much news out there today. Let's start with Apple. What's going on with the next Apple event?
Well, there's an Apple event planned for next week, and you might have thought, wait a minute, didn't Apple already announce its iPhones? And you're right, they did. But this next event is actually going to be about their computers. So we're getting three events in the fall. September was iPads and Apple Watches. October was the iPhone. Now we're getting the Macs. And this is going to be a little more nerdy. You know, it's more my thing, where they're going to be changing out the brain.
Wait a second. Are you calling yourself a nerd, Ian?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a proud nerd. Yes. And yes, and I live in an age where nerds are cool, so I'm winning. But so essentially what they're doing is they're changing out the brains of the computer. So it used to be that Apple's computers were run by Intel chips, which are the chips that run most of the world's computers. Now they're going to switch to the same chips that are in our iPhones and iPads. This is a very big deal for the future of computers, because we are looking at the possibility of getting even thinner computers, much more battery life, And if you remember, when Apple came out with the MacBook Air back in 2008, a lot of people looked at it and said, wow, this thing's really thin, but it's ridiculous, right? It didn't have a DVD drive. Everyone thought you needed one, and so on. Now, today, what do we have? There's almost no computers that have a DVD drive. So it's those types of things Apple's always on the leading curve of, and I'm really curious to see what they do with these chips, because it really may mean a change in how we use our computers.
Well, if it extends battery life, that would be helpful. And, of course, you know, my MacBook Pro is getting a little bit old. So, of course, I'm always, like everybody else, looking for something new and hot and useful. But it'll be very interesting to see. Do you think that they're going to continue to break apart their, you know, you said we're going to have three of these fall events. But did they used to do it all together in one big fell swoop? Is it that there are just too many products now, or they want to have more focus on each of the categories?
One of my favorite things that I got out of Apple's head of marketing at the time was when I asked him about something similar to this, and he responded back, "We don't want to be predictable."
So you never know what you're going to get is what they're telling you.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, it's silly, right? But, you know, I think honestly that with the coronavirus being what it is and the lockdowns or the health measures that we're all dealing with, the reality is that Apple can't have a normal event, right? And they've learned that their digital events, these ones that are only online, are doing pretty well. You know, we've written about it on CNET. They're well received. A lot of people watch them. And so now it appears they're taking it and running, right? They're going to say, okay, well, let's see if we can get a third event out of this.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but this is also an unusual moment. Normally, computer upgrades are something you just put a press release about. But this is going to be, this is a major change in their computers, and hopefully they're going to not waste our time, right? But it's going to be a very interesting, you know, when they want to get your attention, they have to have a good reason for it, and typically they do.
Yeah, no, they do. So another company that you can never quite get where they're going is Tesla. They announced that their full self-driving feature is going to cost an extra $10,000. That seems like a big price bump. What do you think?
What are you talking about? It's pocket change.
Yeah, sure it is. Especially today.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting thing going on. So Tesla's self-driving mode originally was something like $8,000 more. So it's actually increased. And this is kind of an interesting thing to watch because they came out, you know, it came out a long time ago as a beta, right? And you never want to put a beta anything in your car if you're me, frankly.
Right.
But people did, and there were a couple of accidents, including a couple of fatalities. And a lot of people were told, do not take your hands off the wheel. This is just something that we're still doing. So now they've come out with it again a couple weeks ago, a new version, and again, someone has on, you know, on Twitter and on YouTube almost getting into an accident with a median. And a lot of people are looking at it saying, what are you doing, Tesla? And Tesla, for its part, frankly, I think they're trying to have this out there, get some data, but also by pricing it so high, only a certain number of people are even going to buy it, right? And only a certain number of people are going to buy a Tesla. So I think really they're just trying to kind of push it out there and say, hey, we've got the marketing for it. We're in the future. We're going to be there. And I think we all agree that eventually we'll be there, but Tesla wants to be first, and this is how they're doing it.
All right. So we've got Apple wanting to be first, and Tesla wants to be first. This is why their stock prices are so sky high. Let's shift a little bit and talk a little bit about Black Friday, because I think it's going to be a little bit unusual. I do not expect to see stories of people, you know, battering down the doors at Walmart and killing people trying to rush in and get deals. What do you see?
Yeah, God forbid, right? I think it'll be really interesting this year. So we at CNET, of course, we have been Black Friday central for the tech industry for a long time. And one of the things we do is we go through all the deals that are out there and try to really identify what's worth buying. We have these crazy databases that go back a crazy amount that'll tell us, like, is this deal worth it, right? So one of the things that we are telling people now is that if you are looking at holiday shopping, you need to have a plan starting really now. And I know it's annoying because because it's not even Black Friday. But guess what? It's already Black Friday. In fact, Walmart is having Black Friday every Friday. Every day is Black Friday. So, and that means that the retailers are pushing a ton of stuff online. You may have heard the Xbox and the PlayStation, the new ones that are coming out next week. Those are going to be online orders. A lot of retailers have said, don't even come into our stores. We're not going to have them. You only buy them online. And I think a lot of retailers are going to push you online, which means you are going to need to have a plan. And also, you need to buy early, because if you think about the end of the year, every time around that last week of Christmas, the people who are dilly-dallying end up being, you know, really worried their packages will arrive. And this time, I think if you wait too long, you're not going to get that package under the tree or next to the menorah. So you really have to be ahead of the game this time.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point. I also wonder how all the Amazon days, Prime days, factor into this, right?
Because a ton.
So I have heard, or seen, I should say, I have seen numbers that suggest that not only are people going to spend less this year on the holidays, which we're going to actually talk about on tomorrow's John Williams show, but more than a quarter of people have already done all of their shopping for the holidays. And that would mean to me that Prime Day, which Amazon had, I want to say last week or the week before.
In October, actually.
It was in October. Which was, yeah. So
time has no meaning in the pandemic.
No,
don't worry.
It doesn't. My thinking is maybe a lot of people took advantage of Prime Day, got their shopping done, and they're done now. What are you thinking?
That was a long conversation about Prime Day, actually. A lot of us were thinking about it. And one of the things that was really interesting is that Prime Day typically is in July, right? And retailers have learned that Christmas in July kind of works. That's why we have a joke about it. But also, when Amazon started doing Prime Day in July, it really got going. Like, Walmart got into it.
Right.
Best Buy got into it. Everyone was suddenly seeing sales work in July, which was really unusual. Now it's normal. Well, this year, because of the pandemic, they pushed it to October, which means all of the Black Friday stuff appears to have just shifted into October, which means we're in the middle of it now. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people did their shopping. I've already done mine. And, you know, but I'm also a nerd, as we established. But the other thing that I'm really curious to see is how much the sales change as we get closer to Black Friday. Because one of the things we know is that retailers are very nervous. They are worried about economic uncertainty. They hate that. If you think about the last recession, what we saw was that retailers became so scared that they started putting extra sales on as we got closer to Christmas.
Right.
That's not normal. So, you know, this time around, they're learning from that mistake, and they're saying, well, we're going to offer you Black Friday price protection. Some of the retailers are promising if you buy something today, they will discount you if they put it on sale on Black Friday. That's how much they want your business. So it's going to be really interesting to watch. And then, of course, you know, we're all going to be talking about UPS and FedEx and the USPS deliverers having the craziest week of their lives right before Christmas. But, you know, that's how it'll be.
Yeah, I think that you've made a really good point. And one thing that strikes me is that the whole the number of people who are unemployed is very high. But even people who are employed, you know, many, many of them, their households have taken a pay cut or some sort of they've had either, I don't know, maybe they've just lost their job or they've had to take a pay cut or they were
unemployed. Or they're anxious about the future, right?
Exactly.
There are plenty of those as well.
And so when you have that kind of an environment, people just generally spend less. And what we've seen so far this year is that the savings rate for America is something north of 30%. This is just it sounds like that's a good thing, but that's just an unheard of number. And it'll be very interesting to see how this all translates into.
And you want to know a funny thing? I did the research on this just randomly for a different story. In 2008, the savings rate was under 5%.
Right.
So we are doing a lot better in this country than we used to be. But I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the other things is that the research says a lot of the sales are going to shift online. So online is going to have a banner year. It'll be huge, but the retail industry overall may suffer.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Ian, we have to take a break and go to the news, but thank you so much for being with us today and sharing some of that. And I know we'll talk to you again next week.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right. You too. Ian Schur is editor-at-large of CNET.com, and he is a self-described nerd who is going to be out there watching what's going on with the big Apple event next week, and we'll all be watching that. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that Apple event poke through in the stock market next week. Typically, Apple's been on a tear anyway, as all of the big tech companies have been. But after they make those kinds of announcements, it'll be really something to watch. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for John Williams today and tomorrow. He's enjoying some of this late summer weather. It is beautiful out. If you have not gone outside, drag yourself away from the TV screen or your radio station and head out and enjoy a little bit of sunshine. It is just fabulous out. Matt Vanini joins me on the line now. He is a fourth-generation restaurateur and president of Restaurant Solutions, restaurantaccountingservices.com. Matt, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Elise. I appreciate you having me.
So Governor Pritzker has threatened to shut down restaurants, and we're facing just incredibly surging coronavirus cases here in the state of Illinois, as they are in many, many other places around the world. And yet some Illinois restaurants and bars have decided to defy those orders and stay open. I know that you work with restaurants and you handle accounting for many restaurants. What are you seeing? It's really a tough thing, right? Restaurants are on the verge of just basically throwing up their hands and going, we can't go through this again. And yet they're really walking a tightrope. So let's start with your perspective. What are you hearing from your clients about what they're facing?
It's a wonderful question, and it's an unfortunate one to have to address. Looking nationally, you can definitely see a disparate attack on an approach on how to keep restaurants open. And, you know, in some of the more restrictive states, I saw something from the Pacific Northwest this morning where they literally handcuffed an owner and brought him out. And I think that that's an extreme.
Wait a second.
There might have been some other stuff. We're researching it now. But they were saying because he was allowing patrons in there past 10 o'clock. And I think that there was more, you know, and to not proliferate misinformation, I always think that you have to look one step deeper. And I think that this is a perfect segue to this industry that has just been riddled we can't deny the COVID numbers. We just can't. We all have to do our part. We agree on that. I think where the operators, and rightly so, where the operators are throwing up their hands, it's getting to the point where there's almost vilification of the operators. You know, every operator that I know, including myself, is highly focused on making sure that we can provide jobs to the individuals who have worked for us for months, for years, for decades. And that has been the one commonality, is the heart-wrenching, you know, you're on today, you're off tomorrow, you're on next week, you're off tomorrow. And I think where the frustration has really reached epic proportions has been in the lack of a cohesive strategy for most operators. And we're getting to the point now where when we're being told, when what we're being told defies common sense. I mean, I don't know about you, Elise, but I'm not going to sit outside on a patio in 2-degree weather just to enjoy a chicken fried steak.
Oh, I'm actually counting on the 70-plus degrees we're getting in November to just carry on straight through to March. Is that not going to happen?
I think we're all banking on it. But
yeah.
For those of you who,
right.
I think for those of us who aren't, I go back and what we need and what we advise our clients is, first and foremost, you're in the restaurant business. We're not in the employment business. We're in the restaurant business. And I know that this is a major shift for most of us because, as I just previously said, we're so dedicated to our staff and we're so dedicated to our guests. But we have to remember, without an organization, without an operation, without a restaurant or restaurant group, we have none of the following. We just don't. So when Danny Meyer a couple months ago when Danny Meyer got on, I think it was on CBS This Morning on Sunday, he had said, he was asked, why didn't you bring back some of the 2,800 employees that you had? And he said, look, I have to negotiate these restaurants. I have to negotiate getting them through this pandemic, or there won't be anything for people to come back to. And I would encourage my friends, my clients, and colleagues to look at their businesses, and the first thing is to determine what the minimum break even is for their business. This is something that most businesses, the last time we even thought about this was when we opened the restaurants. I've said it before. We didn't have a brand. We didn't have guest loyalty. So there was really an unknown moving forward. I want my friends to get back into that mindset. They have to get back into that mindset, that opening restaurant mindset, because otherwise being told to invest in heaters and invest in geodesic domes made out of PVC, I mean, it just becomes ridiculous at that point. So step one, look at what you can do to survive for the business. Step two, and we have seen this through data, when the restaurants first got shut down and restaurants moved to we'll call it an all-digital premise. Presence, rather. They started doing DoorDash. They started doing the third-party deliveries. We saw about 10% of their sales immediately come in through these third-party delivery and curbside pickup. When the restaurants reopened, that number didn't get less.
Yeah.
That percentage of folks that were dining, they were still there. And now my strategy for my clients is to have an all-digital presence that when you come to, pardon me, when you get on a website,
you can actually,
you feel like you're part of that restaurant.
Right.
You got it.
And you can actually order and have contact with it. Matt Vanini is a fourth generation restaurateur, president of Restaurant Solutions, Inc. And can we find you at restaurantaccountingservices.com?
You can. Thank you, Elise.
All right, Matt, thank you so much. That's incredibly helpful to get that perspective from you. It is 12:42. Here's Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Ratings agency Fitch says Illinois needs to consider other options to balance its budget. This follows the failure of the graduated income tax amendment on Election Day. Without the $1.3 billion the graduated tax would have brought in, the state will be left looking for other sources of revenue. Governor Pritzker suggested yesterday that the amendment failure will mean a tax increase for everyone, not just the wealthy who are targeted by the amendment. Chicago startup Luna Lights has been acquired by the senior care tech company Centrix. Luna Lights creates an automatic lighting solution that prevents nighttime falls by senior citizens. United Airlines customers have filed a lawsuit claiming they were victims of age discrimination. They say they were excluded from a 10% discount the airline offered only to 18 to 22-year-olds. The suit seeks class action status on behalf of all customers excluded from the promotion because of their age. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Elise Fling sitting in for John Williams today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. WGN reporter Amy Guth joins us on the line now. Hey, Amy.
Hi, Elise. How are you today?
I'm about to enjoy this beautiful weather. Have you gotten outside yet?
I have not. I mean, I barely go outside anymore, but it looks nice from my window.
Well, for sure, open your window. It is beautiful out there. So a lot of economic news today, and of course we're waiting for word from the Federal Reserve on their take, but 751,000 first-time unemployment benefit applicants. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. A lot of things are in a holding pattern right now. I think a lot of people are just waiting to see that election outcome and see how markets around the world will react after that. But the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell a little bit last week, to about 751,000. That's still historically high. That's a lot, but every week we see this number. You know, we take a look at it, and it kind of gives us a snapshot of an economic picture. When we're talking about the people who are continuing to receive unemployment benefits, that declined a little bit, but it's still at 7.3 million. So
big
that
number.
Does show that. Yeah, that's a big number. That's a lot of people. That does show, though, that some people are being recalled to old jobs, or they are finding new jobs. So, you know, people aren't necessarily staying on as long, but still, 7.3 million is a whole heck of a lot. a lot of people. And, you know, certainly when we're looking at, you know, 22 million jobs lost to the pandemic in early spring, that, you know, the net number of that, of where, you know, some of those were furloughs and came back, things like that, we're still talking about just a large number. But, you know, 751,000, while still historically high, it is slightly less than it was last week.
And the number of people, the number of new jobs that are being created, that's also slowing, which is, I think, why the, you know, the general consensus among economists is, hey, get that stimulus out right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because as we've seen some case numbers go back up in some areas, I think we've been warned since the very beginning of this idea of the second wave. And, you know, here in Chicago, health officials said, we're in the second wave. This, you know, it's happening. We see these numbers to support this. The data supports it. You know, I think it is a little bit different when you see that. When we're talking about people getting recalled to a job, they may not be recalled if there's fear that it will just be closed down again, particularly in the restaurant sector and the hospitality industry, conventions, hotels, things like that, an industry that's been hit so hard, travel, another one, where there were some furloughs, it picked back up a little bit over the summer, and then we're starting to see that decline again. So, you know, I think with everything right now, it's really going to be a matter of, in a year or so, looking back over 2020 and into 2021, of what that data tells us and how it kind of tells the story of what really happened and how people were feeling and how employers were feeling.
I just have to, as one number that I that really struck me this week when I was looking at some of the data, you know, typically there's single digits or maybe 10% of people are food insecure. And right now we have something like a quarter of all Americans who are food insecure. And I think that really speaks to that K recovery I talked about earlier in the show, where people who are doing well are doing well and people who are not doing well are really, really struggling.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I too have seen some data around that. I was looking at some data, particularly around young people, just in the Midwest and in Illinois, children who are food insecure, and it's really just a staggering and shameful number, really. You know, I feel like food is a right, not a privilege, especially, you know, for young children. You hate to see anyone in that situation, but, you know, staggering numbers that have been accelerated by the pandemic.
Yeah. Just quickly, you know, I know that we have McDonald's is obviously headquartered here and we've got a lot of focus on it. Do you think McDonald's is doing enough to protect workers from COVID?
Yeah, well, that's the big question right now, because there has been this uptick since COVID really took hold of the area in a very public way in March. There have been a large number of McDonald's workers, not just here, but around the U.S., that have been filing complaints and lawsuits. They've been staging protests, things like that, saying that McDonald's is just not doing enough to keep them safe. So just recently in Gage Park, there was a McDonald's worker who filed a complaint with OSHA and said that six workers were infected with COVID-19, and some of them came to work sick, potentially, you know, spreading it to others. A McDonald's worker in California filed similar complaints with the local health department and California OSHA offices last week, alleging something very similar. So, you know, I think a lot of people in positions of leadership and health departments, even in academic settings, are really taking a look at the private employers, not just McDonald's, but you know, if kind of left to your own devices to keep employees safe, that's open to interpretation, that's open to budget limits, that's open to kind of your own moral compass there, and your own feelings, especially when it's become so politicized.
Yeah.
That how that can play out in a McDonald's restaurant has been really quite interesting. And, you know, McDonald's workers are really taking it quite seriously. So we've seen quite a few lawsuits and quite a few, you know, complaints to health departments and things like that. Since the start of the pandemic through about a week and a half ago, OSHA mentioned 144 established places nationwide that they've specifically cited for violations. Now that's on their website, and that's usually after an investigation that you know, being cited happens, they'll look into it before they'll post it on the website.
Yeah.
So,
you
know, very interesting how like the definition of clean and safe has really changed and kind of doubled down in the last year.
WGN reporter Amy Guth with the latest. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Elise. Always nice to talk with you.